You're listening to The Point. I'm Edie Todd, and joining me, historian Tom Dresser. He's written a number of books about the history of Martha's Vineyard, and his latest is a series of biographical sketches of some of the extraordinary women who called the vineyard home. The title is Women of Martha's Vineyard. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
All right, so there have been a number of prominent, capable, and extraordinary women who have lived on Martha's Vineyard over the years. How did you choose the 16 that you have in the book?
Well, that's a very good question, and something that a number of people ask. I wanted to cover the whole island, so I took somebody from each town. So I wanted to be fair in that way. I wanted to cover different ethnic groups, African American, Native American, Portuguese, white. I wanted summer people and year-rounders. I wanted career paths that were different, too. But it turned out that a lot of them had similarities, so we can get into that. But it was really trying to catch a scattering of people who were prominent across the vineyard.
And as you're saying, really highlight the diversity of the people
right.
who call the vineyard home. So your book starts out with one of perhaps the most eccentric vineyard women, at least in her day, Nancy Luce. Describe her and why you included her.
Well, there was a review written about her about 25 years ago by Art Railton, who was a vineyard historian, and he said that she was like the first woman entrepreneur. She was the first one that really elicited tourism, and she really showed that she could be a woman on her own. She was a single woman who lived by herself, and she made enough money so that she could live by herself in the 19th century, and that was very unique. Looking into her background, she had a little bit more than just being the hen lady. She was a woman who had fallen in love, and her lover was lost at sea, and they think that that's probably what put her over the edge. She also had elderly parents that she had to care for, and so she had a lot of things going on. At the age of 26, she basically turned a corner and became a little bit crazy, if you will, and she put more of her emphasis on hens.
She loved her chickens.
She loved her chickens than she did on people, and she was sort of isolated, but she got into writing poetry. She sold eggs. She had a cow and raised milk and sold milk, so she really was a character as well as an independent person.
And a lot of she became sort of a, as you say, a tourist attraction in a lot of ways. But you feel bad for her because some of the kids and things sort of bullied her, teased her, which, you know, certainly that seemed to bother. In some of her writings, you could see that bothered her.
Yeah. If you think about it, when there's generally a conception that or perception that someone who doesn't fit into our mindset is an oddball or different or difficult. And we hate to say it, but there is bullying going on, there's teasing, and there's making fun of people, and that's really what was happening in the 19th century. She was a little bit off the beaten path, and people would go up to her home in New Lane and tease her and make fun of her, and she really resented that, but then she turned around and she tried to convert them to her religion, and she tried to, you know, make them be a little bit stronger, straighter people. And they ended up buying her books and having her their picture taken with her, or her picture taken and selling it. So she really kind of used the people who were taunting her to make her money.
Yeah. It seems as though the vineyard, of course, attracts a fair number of people involved in the arts, especially theater and acting. And your book profiles Catherine Cornell, Patricia Neal, but perhaps the earliest female vineyard residents to make a name for themselves in show business were the Adams sisters.
Yes, I'm fascinated by them, and I really found them a very intriguing pair of vineyarders. They were born in Chilmark during the Civil War years. They never grew to be over 4 feet tall. Two sisters in Chilmark, very short ladies. And by the time they were around 20, they were invited to meet General Tom Thumb and become part of Barnum and Bailey Circus. And they did that for a number of years. But they had a chance to go to Europe, and they learned that the European circus performed on Sunday, and they didn't, as strict Methodists, they didn't want to perform on the Sabbath. So they refused to go to Europe, and they sort of turned that down. And I think that shows their character, that they were really strong New England mm-hmm. women who believed in their church first, and they didn't want to put the circus acts ahead of that.
And I think there's definitely photos of every woman that you highlight here in the book. So tell us a little bit about the research. Where did you turn for the details about these women's okay. lives?
The Vineyard is very rich in resource in many different ways. But for this one, I found Lindsay Lee's books, Vineyard Voices and More Vineyard Voices, to be absolutely the best sort of research because she interviewed a number of these people and got them to talk about their childhood and got them to talk about their feelings growing up and their feelings about the Vineyard. And I just kept going back to that source over and over. Mm. So Lindsay Lee's books are really the best.
And we should say Lindsay's been collecting oral histories for a long time now.
Right, yeah, right. These were done in the 90s. They're excellent, and they really encompass the whole thing. But beyond that, I turned to obituaries because all the women that I reviewed were deceased. So there are obituaries that were written that are excellent that are in the Vineyard Gazette. That's a great mm-hmm. file. But the most fun I had was researching the women themselves through their children. Mm. And you get a real summary of how the woman impacted her kids, as well as the import on them. And I think that was something that I found was a lot more gratifying than I thought it was going to be, because there was such a rich depth of information that I could get from them.
Right. And one of those children that you talked to would be Cynthia Riggs, to talk
right.
about her mom, Diana Coffin Riggs. Tell us about she. What a fascinating woman she was.
Well, if there's another volume about women of Martha's Vineyard, she definitely would be. Cynthia would be
yeah,
one of them.
Right.
But Cynthia, yes, spoke very highly about her mother, her mother's past, talking about the grandparents that Diona's Coffin Riggs had, and also about the love of her parents, how close they were to each other, how her mother, Diona's, was such a poet, so dedicated to just getting the words right and putting the right phrases together and getting it together the way it should be. Diona's was the correspondent for the Vineyard Gazette. She was a member of a number of committees in West Tisbury, and she really kind of was like the salt of the earth, even though she spent much of her time not in the vineyard. She mm-hmm. Spent her early adult years in New Jersey. So she came back here in 54 and then spent the rest of her life here.
And we sort of get to a hint of Diona's from Cynthia's writing. Cynthia is a mystery writer, and her protagonist is Victoria Trumbull, this 90-something-year-old sort of detective, if you will, based on her mom.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So her mother lives on
in her books,
writing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have one funny story, and I'm sure Cynthia's probably told you this, but of course Diona's would visit a lot of the nursing homes, and she was in her 90s, and she was going to visit the old folks.
Right, right. That's so true.
Another famous female vineyard resident you write about is Emily Post, known for her book on manners and locally known for her gardens at her home in Edgartown.
Yes. The gardens are sort of, there's a sad aspect to why the gardens became what they are, is that Emily was in the process of, she bought the house in 1927, and she was remodeling it with her son, who was an architect, and her son died very suddenly of appendicitis, and Emily, who had been nationally known for 5 years after writing this book on etiquette, she went into a very serious grieving system, and she came out of it by putting all her energies into the garden, and she sort of designed the garden with trying to make the colors work together and the patterns of the flowers and so forth. And it was really the way she poured out her grief mm. into the garden. And then we became the beneficiaries of it because for the last 50 years or so, or 75 years, people have gone by the garden and really appreciated it. They even had tour buses going through there in the 50s. And the tourists would get out and they'd see the garden and see Emily. And, you know, she was very receptive to that. So that was her positive contribution.
Since we're talking gardens, we have to mention horticulturist Polly Hill, a name and voice many of our listeners may be familiar with. Her legacy lives on in the Polly Hill Arboretum in West Tisbury. And we have a short clip of Polly.
I didn't know what would grow on Martha's Vineyard. There was so little growing. I called it horticultural poverty. Nobody tried things. And since my husband and I lived on experimenting, I said, I will experiment. And I wanted to do something for the island. I thought the island needed a new windbreak for the shores, because they had been using the Japanese black pine, and that had gotten a disease. So I worked on pines, hollies, which are perhaps the best windbreaker at the present, and native on the island. And then for fun, I wanted to do camellias. Now here you're coming to a fenced area. This is pretty far from the house, which was deliberate. I wanted to be as far from the house as possible, because I wanted to try to put things here. If they weren't successful, I didn't want to mess near the house. Joanne called this Polly's playpen, and I had another friend who called it Winky's Wee Tweet. That's right. The grandchildren called me Winky. So this is Winky's Wee Tweet.
She lived to be 100 years old.
She did. She did. Yeah. She was a remarkable woman. But she didn't start her arboretum until she was 50.
Right.
Like Emily Post, she sort of had a rebirth at the halfway mark, so to speak, and got started at the age of 50.
Yeah, and Polly's Playpen is still out there at the arboretum. It's one of my favorite spots in
it
there.
Is.
Yeah, there's
it
some
is.
Really unique plantings.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So did you know, you must have known Polly then.
I just knew her from a distance. Mm-hmm. I probably said hi to her when she went by on her golf cart once or twice. But I got most of my information, besides the public information, I talked to employees who worked with her. And there were just a very serious sense of plants that percolated through Polly's life. That if you were willing to talk about plants, that was great. But if you wanted to talk about, you know, what you did last weekend or what was happening downtown, she didn't want to hear about that.
Just plants. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number if you'd like to join our conversation. We're talking with historian Tom Dresser. His new book is Women of Martha's Vineyard. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@wgbh.org. Helen Lamb was the founder and director of Camp Jabberwocky, a camp for children with cerebral palsy, and was known throughout the island as Hellcat. You have some amusing stories about her ability to get what she needed to keep the camp running.
Right. Well, first we got to go with her name, Hellcat, right. Because her son relayed this story to me that virtually every vineyarder has a story about trying to race for the boat, trying to catch the boat. And Helen Lamb was racing for the boat, and she was pulled over by a trooper, and Helen was able to talk her way not only out of getting a ticket, but she conned the cop into leading her, escorting her to the boat. With lights flashing, she was able to get to the boat. So Hellcat knew how to handle the police, knew how to get to the boat. And
do you know what that secret was? We'd all like to know that
know
secret. Just her charm.
her charm, but her personality was really, it was very demanding, and she needed to get what she wanted, and she really made it very clear. One of the first times she started the camp 60 years ago, we just celebrated the 60th anniversary of Camp Jabberwocky. But back when she was starting it in 1953, she needed to get boat tickets, and she really worked on the steamship week in and week out trying to get tickets for the kids, and she was able to do that. Mm. She also has convinced all the people who work for Camp Jabberwocky are volunteers. Nobody gets paid, including the director. So that's something that really showed her dedication to getting what she wanted, getting what she needed. Mm. And she really proved that she could do it.
The vineyard has long been a summer destination for African Americans, the roots of which can be traced back to the Shearer Cottage. And you wrote a whole book on this as well. Mm-hmm. Doris Pope Jackson was the third generation to run the cottage as an inn. And she did everything from cook to clean to paint the bathrooms. Tell us a little bit about her.
Well, I think the thing, yes, she was dedicated to doing the work, but I think that the heritage of keeping the inn going was the preeminent thing in her life, that she really wanted to make sure that the cottage continued as a an example for African Americans. And like Helen Lamb, they just celebrated an anniversary. They were 100 years old last September, and Shearer Cottage is alive and well and doing very well. And Doris Jackson, right into her 80s and 90s, she was still working very hard to make things come together. One example was that a relative came by the house, the cottage, one day, and they saw Doris out on the roof fixing some shingles. And Doris was in her late 80s at the time. And another story is that her daughter was concerned because in her 90s, Doris was still down scrubbing the showers out to make sure everything was spotless and ready for the new guests that were coming in. So her dedication to making the inn work was really the thing that made her the most important part of that story.
Yeah. Then we have Gladys Wittes, was a tribal elder in the Wampanoag tribe of Aquinnah and was an accomplished potter. And we have a short clip of Gladys.
One of the first things I remember, and I guess I probably was 4 or 5, was my grandfather getting up around 5 o'clock in the morning and making the fire. And all the while he was making the fire and checking things, he was singing and dancing. Yep. Wake you up in the morning, Grandpa was singing. That was something that came down from way back. Native Americans sing, get up and sing at sunrise. A lot of tribes do it now out west. When the sun begins to rise, they sing songs. And that's what Grandpa was doing. When I was growing up, we had 3,400 acres of playground. We made our own entertainment. Every once in a while, we'd overstep our bounds. But by the time you got home, I have never to this day found out how they knew, but they knew. And there was no such thing as a telephone.
Word spreads fast, doesn't it?
Does, it does, yeah. It does.
So tell us a little bit about Gladys.
Well, as you mentioned, she was a potter, and she never used a kiln, and she never used a wheel. Everything was done by hand, and it was sun-dried. And for years, she would have a table out of the cliffs, and she'd be selling her wares. And I talked to her son, Carl, who was very good about sharing things about his mother, who passed away just a year ago. And some of the things that he was talking about was her making a pot for him, and he gifted something to her, and they would share back and forth on the pottery. But in my opinion, Gladys's biggest impact was her influence on the tribe itself. For years, she wanted to get her children, but also other tribal people involved in getting the tribe federally recognized. And that was really her legacy, that she was able to do that. Now, talking to her son thinks that, you know, it was a number of people that did it. And that's true. There were other people involved. But I think Gladys really led the way. She was a little bit older than some of the other people, and she really motivated a lot of people. And she had a dedication and a drive that kept other people going.
Right. Motivation. She was the motivating factor, yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think that's the legacy. And in some ways, of all the people I reviewed or went into, her legacy of the tribe, I think, is mm-hmm. one of the most important things that we can look back on and say this was done by, a lot was done by this woman.
Right. Let's talk about actress Catherine Cornell.
Okay. Last night I had the opportunity to see a movie that she was in called This Is Our Island, and she did this for the 300th anniversary of the founding of the town of Vineyard Haven. Catherine came to the island in the late 30s. She built a house there on Lake Tashmu called Chip Chop. She really got involved during the World War II with the USO, trying to raise money for the servicemen. In looking at her life and in looking at several of the nationally known people, there are really two stories going on. There's the national story and there's the Vineyard story. And from a national story, Catherine burst on the scene in the 1920s and carried on right till the 1950s as a leading American stage actress. on the vineyard. She had her home in Vineyard Haven. She helped out with the during the war and with the building or rebuilding the Association Hall, which became Catherine Cornell Theater. But she also was just one of the people. And if you read the remarks that the selectmen said in the town reports of the early 1970s, they really saw her as kind of a local celebrity. She was just one of the people that was going around town, but she was a celebrity, and she just, you know, she wore her jeans and she went to the market just like everybody else. Mm-hmm. But it was just kind of a nice feeling that here we could have someone who's nationally known all across the country coming to Vineyard Haven, and she could go shopping and not be mobbed by people. Right. And, you know, she was just
and
one of us.
She was approachable, yeah.
Very approachable.
Very approachable, yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about Dorothy West, the writer, Dorothy West. She's okay. Another very popular figure.
Yes, she was a fire plug. When mm-hmm. she would go into the Vineyard Gazette, where she had a column that she wrote, she would just excite everything that was going on. It was like the light bulbs were popping. That's what the editor, Julia Wells, says, that her memories of Dorothy are just that she was a live wire, definitely. She was a diminutive woman, but with a lot of energy, a lot of enthusiasm. Her background is fascinating, that she traveled to Russia. She worked for the WPA. She lived in New York City. She was the youngest member of the Harlem Renaissance during the 1920s. So she had all that for a background. And then she moved to the Vineyard in 1948, and she spent the rest of her life, more than 50 years, here on the Vineyard. And it was that time that she really became part of the Vineyard, sort of like Catherine Cornell, a celebrity mm-hmm. who lived locally, very approachable, very excitable, and very much part of the island scene.
Mm-hmm. And Patricia Neal, I mean, there's another popular figure. You picked out right. some really great women to highlight. Tell us about Patricia Neal.
Yeah.
Patricia Neal.
Well, I personally had the opportunity to pick her up and drive her to, we had an Alzheimer's walk, and she was the honorable chairman. And she said, I'll be your chairperson, but you have to pick me up and drive me. So I had that honor to do that. She had a lot of tragedies in her life and a lot of high points. So her life was like a roller coaster. She won an Oscar. She was in HUD with Paul Newman. She acted with Ronald Reagan. She was in science fiction movies. She had an affair with Gary Cooper. She was all over the place. And yet, on a personal level, one of her children died at the age of 8 years old. Another child was in an accident, hit by, when he was in a baby carriage, he was hit by a taxi cab. Mm. Her husband was Roald Dahl, who stood by her for 30 years and then left her for another person. And probably the most physically upsetting thing was that she had a stroke at the age of 39 and had to recover from that. So she really was a remarkable person in her strengths and suffered a lot, but she also came out of it in a very good way, too.
A real survivor.
Yeah.
You look at her stories. I mean, just one of the many things that happened to her, you know, a lot of people might not be able to overcome. But so many different challenges through her life.
Right.
Yeah,
things you wouldn't expect.
Yeah. So there are many more women, I'm mm-hmm. sure, that you could have profiled. Will there be a Women of Martha's Vineyard Part 2?
Well, I say in the beginning of the book that there certainly are more people. I had Rose Styron. I asked Rose Styron to write the foreword, and she had several more people that she wanted me to include. But my criteria really was defined by what I wanted for people who really made a commitment to live on the island and to contribute to the island. So I wanted people who were there for a good length of time and really made a lasting commitment. And that's why I chose the people that I did. I think if I do go back for a volume two, I'll need a little different criteria mm-hmm. to get going on it.
Right, exactly. But, yeah, and as you're saying, some of these just summer residents, but you can have a big impact even when you're only there for a few months. Right.
No, that's true. Yeah.
Historian Thomas Dresser, his book is Women of Martha's Vineyard. Tom Singh, thanks for dropping in with us today. We appreciate seeing you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Indy Todd. Thank you for listening.
Amy Vins produces The Point, with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.